everyone in the States is angry at everyone and there's sides. But when you go out in the world, you don't meet those people. I have to realize that my audience isn't on fucking Twitter all day.
Yeah.
The actual asses in seats, the warm bodies, have fucking lives. It's the best feeling when you have a bit that you know the audience is gonna laugh at and then think, oh, that was wrong. But it's too late because you laughed because I'm right. And so, like, I write as a defense attorney. Okay, I'm gonna take something that would go against the grain of the audience, find a fucking loophole that makes perfect sense, like a defense attorney.
Yeah.
And then you can't handle the truth. I accidentally ate a bunch of gummies when I was cleaning out the fucking bar before football Sunday. And I thought, no, this is a, must be a special bag of gummies.
Cause you ate a bag of weed gummies.
I ate four.
You ate four?
10 milligrams.
And what kind of state were you in?
Well, it was weird because it was during when I was trying to do Sober October. And that's why I was out cleaning on a Saturday night, because I was sober and I didn't know what to do with myself. I hate myself. I'm watching my podcast in my head. I'm watching what you're watching and I'm like, just shut the fuck up, dude.
Hello and welcome to Trigonometry. I'm Francis Foster.
I'm Constantine Kissing.
And this is a show for you if you want honest conversations with fascinating people.
Our brilliant guest today is a comedy great, Doug Stanhope himself. As you can probably tell, we are in the world's smallest hotel conference room. Doug Stanhope is about to join us in a second when we give him the green light.
This episode is not for the claustrophobic.
Doug Stanhope, welcome to Trigonometry.
Hi, sorry that we're in this fucking access room of the executive lounge.
No, you're the superstar.
How did you
we came to you, Doug.
Yeah.
That's how
did
it
you
works.
Score this? How did you score the room at the last minute when you realized?
We paid for it
yeah.
in advance. We knew the fuck up was going to happen, that your hotel room wasn't going to be big enough.
Impressive,
so we got a backup. But Doug, you're one of our favorite comics. It's great to have you on the show. Tell everybody how you got into comedy. Like, what was it that drew you to it?
Nobody really cares. Absolutely nobody cares.
We care.
We care.
We care. Comedy. And no one has a good story about how I thought I was funny and I couldn't do karaoke and I couldn't do other things. And so
no fucked up childhood, none of that? That's what most comics have, one of them.
No, not really. My pretty tame childhood. I mean, I was the problem in my childhood. Other people had a bad time because of me. Yeah. I was a problem child, but not because of any kind of outside influence. I can't blame the parents. Just didn't, yeah.
Because you've got like a unique style of comedy. You've forged your own path in many ways. Like, how did you get about doing that? How did you start to create what we know as like Doug Stanhope style comedy?
I have no idea. It's been 32 years, so. Yeah, I didn't start doing this. I wasn't some prodigy where I had opinions or something before my time. I was 23 and did masturbation jokes and whatever, you know, titty bars and pornography. And we were talking about this, me and Hennigan. I'm very high, by the way, and I've been doing this for the entire tour. So the show you saw last night, that's where it kind of went, all right, maybe too high last night. Like, I could not read the room. People were yelling at me to make jokes about the Queen.
Well, yesterday, for people who are watching this back, it was the day the Queen of the Queen's...
It's the day of her funeral pyre.
Yeah. The funeral pyre. That's not how we do things in England. We don't have a pyre.
Oh, really? Advanced? How progressive of you.
We just...
not just burn the body at the
imagine
end of the
tour. Imagine we just stuck the Queen on a pyre.
Just went all Viking and shit on it.
The idea of a Queen is as fucking antiquated as a funeral pyre.
That's a good point.
You might as well burn her in the town square.
On the day of her funeral, Doug.
Well, no, that's what a fucking funeral is for most people, is being burned
that is
alive,
true.
But they're dead.
Been burnt dead. Absolutely.
But anyway, so you ended
the
show.
North Sea, burning boat.
You ended your show with a joke that didn't that caused silence, and you said, "I thought we'd have a moment's silence for the Queen," and walked off stage.
Did I say that last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Oh shit.
That's funny.
That's a great bit of ad lib.
I don't remember the end of that show. That's the problem. Because I'm not a high guy. I've never been a pot guy, and I started playing with it during the quarantine, just edibles. And then I did it on stage just as a tester coming into the UK in Detroit, where I took it on stage when I started to go, okay, if it goes poorly, I'll be at the end anyway. I'll just bail a little early. And it went great. And then we ran into edibles on the beginning of this tour, and I'm like, so I did like full high day. It's the day we did the Have a Word podcast, and that was fun. Like the whole day I was, and so I was high on stage. I'm like, I'm getting high on stage every fucking night, which I never did in my whole career. So last night was the only time I went, nah, maybe too big of a room.
Are you enjoying the whole edibles experience? Because I'll be honest with you, we all love an edible here.
Yeah, I fucking enjoy writing. I actually enjoy the process of writing, where like when I had to come back after 18 months off, I was writing a set by myself high, and I just started writing like longhand, like everything I'm saying, and then I got like a heckler. I'm writing a heckler heckling me, and then I'm trashing the heckler, and I'm laughing my balls off. Like, this is worth nothing. This is just an imaginary show that I just wrote out longhand. Yeah. And I like the creativity, and
it's like doing drugs and then doing an art form, which I think stand up is like. It's so much fun. The only problem is like you alluded to before, is when it tips too far. Like I remember once.
Well, it takes away some of your skills that you're like, I'm watching my brain react to a heckler, to someone shouting out, to me bluffing a segue, and I'm watching my brain watch itself almost like 3D imaging, and I'm just having a completely different experience on stage. But then you lose a skill like, all right, I heard that guy just scream again. Make fun of the Queen! How loud is that? Do I need to address that? And I'm watching my brain process all the things that are usually on airplane mode in your comic brain. You know what's happening, but I'm watching that happen. It was fucking great. Probably not so much for the audience.
And Doug, you mentioned not doing stand-up for 18 months. What was that like?
Bliss. That's when I realized what I want to do with my life is absolutely nothing.
You didn't miss it? You didn't miss the buzz? Not at all?
No.
Really?
None. I missed none of it.
That's incredible. Because I stopped doing stand-up after the pandemic. I was like, this isn't good for me. That like the lifestyle is killing me, you know, traveling around and doing the show. I've got another thing that I really enjoy doing. And so you really, but I always thought you, I imagined you would like, it would be the thing you'd miss it like crazy. You've been doing this for 30 years, man.
I know. At some point you go, I think I've said everything that I need to say. I don't know how else to repackage this. But I did have I thrived during.
Yeah, great. Time.
But I bought that house at that point. It was 15 years I'd lived there, and I didn't know where my shit was.
Really.
And I just had a year and a half to go. Okay, I'm gonna fucking organize the Tupperware drawer, like you just as a 32 years of traveling. Yeah. So you get home, maybe you have a couple months off at best, but you're just like dumping your bags, repacking your bags to go out again. That gave me a sense of home.
That makes a lot of sense, man. And listen, let's talk about your show a little bit, because one of the things that you talk about in your current show is...
How did you come up with trigonometry?
It wasn't hard, man.
That was because when he said the name, I'm like, all right, that's going to be a play on words. Is it trick? Trigonometry. I go, that's fucking brilliant. Yeah. And if you have a brilliant title, the album will follow.
Yeah,
trigonometry.
Well, we were trying to sort of say to people we might have controversial conversations with different people. We wanted to be free, basically, to have whatever conversation we wanted. So it's kind of a trigger warning in a way. Like we're saying, this might be offensive to someone.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering why you're asking me how I started comedy. Fuck about it.
All right, what do you think about the Jews, Doug? No, but listen, like I was going to ask you, because in your show, you've got a very strong anti-authoritarian bent to the stuff you talk about.
And I'm trying to downplay that now.
Why?
Why?
Because everyone's got a fucking opinion, and like you have to balance what's going on with, like, I used to be very anti-government until anti-government, like, you're doing it wrong. Like, I'm trying to soft touch how to be anti-government, and I'm working on things that, again, the edibles fucking help create, like, oh, I'm actually thinking creatively without forcing it because I have a tour coming up.
Yeah.
But then you go, okay, now I have too much information and I don't fucking know. So I'm going with what I know right now, which is not shit.
But that's
interesting. But everyone's got a fucking opinion, like overnight.
And does that make comedy more difficult, the fact that everyone's got an opinion? Whereas before, like, you'd go out and do some stuff and whatever it may be, most people would be like, okay, I'm going to listen. Whereas now they're like...
I riffed on that last night about... the whole, there was a construct of what's really going on. If they said there's we're at war with Afghanistan, everyone's on the same page that we're actually at war with Afghanistan. Now it's split into every news is fake news and that's manipulated and that's slanted and you have no idea what the fuck. And then you realize, I don't care. None of this affects me.
Yeah.
There's no truth anymore is what you're saying.
That's, and I quote Roseanne Barr. She said that to me, I was doing her podcast, and she's got fucking QAnon bents, and she knows she's mentally ill, and she goes, how do we do comedy anymore when there's no such thing as truth left? And that was the most important thing I heard during quarantine. Like,
What is the path for a comedian now? How do you do jokes when everyone's got their own different version of reality?
Well, talk about the shit that matters to you. Talk about your life. If you're just talking about your opinion of what you hear on mainstream media or not mainstream media because you're cooler than that and you still get someone else's fucking opinion... Yeah, maybe you should do something with your life.
Yeah. Well, coming back to my anti-authoritarian question, the reason I was asking you is that, like, the comics I grew up watching, the Carlins and the Hickses, they were pushing back against the authoritarianism that was coming from the Christian right in particular, right? They were pushing back against that. And the political landscape has changed so much now. It's kind of, you know, in America, you've got the Democrats, they're in power now. How does that affect...
I know. But I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is I've reached a saturation point where I've lived through almost everything. Like, none of us grew up in a day where everything's fine now.
True.
It's always been the end of times on some level, and it just comes from more, you know, sources now. Now, there's, you can't get away from that. The world is fucking dying feed. I grew up with four channels, but they were four channels of this is the most important election ever.
Yeah.
Well, which one wasn't in hindsight? Tell me which election you were wrong about that wasn't the most censorship, feminism, the 70s with this sensitive man and pronouns. There was we don't want to be called Miss or Mrs. We want to be called Ms. Yeah, I lived through the 70s of fucking pronoun changes and they get fucking lippy and then it trails off. And go, all right, no one's really going to do that.
It always blows me away. Like, every time I go to America, and I love America, I think it's a fucking great country. I think part of the reason we shit on it in this country is because we're jealous, if I'm being honest. But, like, the fear porn that comes from American news broadcasters It's another level.
Yeah. And I that whole Roseanne quote,
yeah,
where I go, like, I don't even know, like, everyone in the States is angry at everyone and there's sides, but when you go out in the world, you don't meet those people. Mm. I mean, occasionally you'll see a MAGA hat or something, or someone with a Prius with too many bumper stickers, but no, you're making me think that those people hate me. Like, the fear itself is constructed or it's not. I don't know. Like, I have no way to base an opinion on. So I just talk about shit that I know about.
Yeah. When we were in Nashville, we were getting some chicken, and there was a guy who heard that we had a foreign accent, and he said, how are you enjoying America, blah blah blah, and we said, oh, we're actually quite enjoying it. And he got so pissed off. You have no idea, how can you like this fucking country? Is going like, that's what he was like. You know what I mean?
That's weird, like, people here expecting me to shit on the Queen.
Yeah,
disappointed customers. And this lady on fucking Twitter, I should have never looked at Twitter last night when I was really fucking high. And she's like, because the guy kept yelling out, talk about the Queen. And she goes, in that guy's defense, he should have just talked about the Queen. And that would have shut the guy up. And he's had a whole week to write material about the Queen. The Queen is not, she said, she should address the elephant in the room, which it's not my room. A queen doesn't fucking matter to me on any level in any part of my life. When I did shit on monarchy, or it was a special 10 years ago, I have nothing to say. Just the fact that you're angry and expect, like, I had a deadline to write queen jokes. Like, who the fuck does the audience think they are anymore?
Do you think audiences have become more entitled? Like,
yeah.
You do.
Not mine, generally, because I do have a very niche, you know, chunk of the pie, and no one comes in and fucks with me. But yeah, audiences, since comedy became, like, since they could take down comics, I don't know when that started, and we don't have a lot of crossover comics here. I don't know how much your social media. How many comics do you know, American comics, that you only know because of a Me Too or a cancel culture or said the wrong thing?
Yeah.
Like, how many American comics do you know that you wouldn't have known if they hadn't got in trouble, which means sold more tickets and got more famous?
Yeah.
Not a lot, probably, is the truth. Bill Burr, Joe Rogan.
If I didn't know Sadowitz, I'd know him now. I mean, I've never met him, but I'm aware of his legend. I'd know him now just because of getting fucking canceled in Edinburgh at the Fringe.
Yeah. Have you ever seen his shows?
No, I haven't.
Fucking brilliant.
He's an incredible comic, man.
His stuff cannot be on TV.
Yeah.
It just can't. It's incredible.
And I've heard about the backstory and his personality. Yeah. You know, I know guys like that. And definitely bucket list to see Jerry Sadowitz.
Oh, man, he's incredible.
Another thing that asshole kept yelling out between, talk about the Queen, and then you just yell, Jerry Sadowitz! And I'm fucking high, like blind in one eye high. And I can hear and you can't see shit. And it's the Hammersmith. So if you're gonna take fucking high chances and ramble on, do it at the biggest place that you ever play, ever.
Hey Francis, if you were a member of the public, would you like the opportunity to ask incredible guests like Bill Burr, Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, Adam Carolla, Brett Weinstein, John Barnes, Douglas Murray, Nigel Farage, and Lionel Shriver your own questions?
You bet I would.
And what do you think the best way to do that would be?
Probably stalking, mate. You'd have to corner them in the supermarket, probably run near like the sort of frozen food aisles, and then just bark questions at them before they can escape. Not the American ones, as they have guns. And you'd have to be extra careful with the females, as that's how I got in trouble last time.
Do you really imagine you're gonna get Douglas Murray near the frozen food aisle? If you want to ask our incredible guest questions and have access to phenomenal behind the scenes content, then you have to be on our locals.
That's right, for only $7 a month, you get incredible extra content. Behind the scenes footage, giveaways, and also the chance to be part of an incredible community
where you can meet and hang out with like-minded people.
You get access to our American vlogs as we travel across the country interviewing our heroes. An extra 20 minutes of our viral Sam Harris episode as he discusses his approach to COVID. We're also going to start doing giveaways of exclusive trigonometry merchandise like this, a poster from our Edinburgh show signed by both of us.
And also a House of Lords teddy, which you can only get in the House of Lords, signed by the one and only Baroness Fox. Locals also gives you access to an incredible online community. You can share memes, talk about the latest episode, or even make a new friend.
Or just one.
Exactly, more than both of us have, really. People are now doing meetups in their city because they love Locals. In fact, some people enjoy it so much, they prefer it over the show. They prefer Locals to trigonometry.
If I have to get them executed, I'm the one that goes to jail. Right, go to trigonometry.locals.com.
Only $7 a month for all that incredible content. Trigonometry.locals.com. See you there, guys.
It's interesting that you say that, that people have, their audiences have become more demanding, because pre-pandemic, I started comedy in 2009 and I gradually noticed audiences change. And a part of it was like, is it just me? Like people, not everyone, the vast majority were always the same, but there was always that little pocket that just got more and more and more vocal when they were like upset about something or they were demanding something.
Yeah, again, we don't really have that problem in my audiences because at a certain ticket price, people aren't just shuffling in.
Yeah.
Oh, what's going on here? Oh, yeah, a private party, basically.
Yeah.
I'm not accepting new fans for a while. You're going to have to start filling up fucking applications because I people know at this point what they're going to see. It's like an underground garage. But I do know social media is so fucked that, yeah, you will get people that, but that's where... I have to realize that my audience isn't on fucking Twitter all day.
Yeah.
The actual asses in seats, the warm bodies, have fucking lives. And they don't sit around fighting these fake fights, which most of them are. So I don't know how much my act has changed because of... Oh yeah, guide me somewhere. That was me.
No, it's fine.
I guess you're insulated from all this bullshit to some extent by virtue of where you are. Do you feel like you've had to change your act in any way? Or are you just doing you and that's it?
No, I look back in stuff I have filmed over the years, and there's a lot of it where I go, oh shit, there's a word or whatever that. That's completely away from the point of what I was saying, the point I was making, that they'd never hear the point because they heard the word.
So
you look back and go, oh God, I hate that whole thought is lost because I demanded to say a word.
But that's the problem, isn't it, Doug? It's like when somebody looks at material that was done 15 or 20 years ago, and they're like, well, in 2022, this is unacceptable. And you say to them, yeah, but it's not 2022 for when that bit was filmed, whenever it was.
Yeah, again, I am just straddling where I am never going to be famous enough to be canceled.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows. You'd have to, if you have to explain who the person is, then they're not canceled.
Right. Yeah, I see what you, so you think people getting, when they're getting canceled, that you mentioned Jerry Sadowitz or whatever, it's quite often whatever the intention.
He literally got canceled. Remember, cancel culture is this all enveloping term that doesn't quite make sense with every situation. Yeah. And I wish I had a better fucking phrase to recoin it, but what was the question?
His show was canceled.
Oh, literally. Yeah. Yes, it was literally canceled where he was doing a run at the Fringe Festival and evidently someone said, I don't fucking know. But I do know I read it and went, oh, Jerry Sadowitz tickets just went up in price. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Do you ever find yourself, like, because I love you as a comic. You're brilliant. And you tend to go for the topics that are more controversial, the hot button topic. Is there an attraction to you for wanting to hit that, or is it you just think, fuck it?
That's what's interesting to us. Yeah. And I'm guessing rules still apply that in a green room, comics who are tired of fucking pablum, the first shit we talk about is, you know, awful things in a green room.
Right.
Yeah.
The same way cops or, you know, firefighters, gallows humor is what they call it. Mm. Yeah, we have gallows humor naturally because we've seen every other lighter form of comedy. Mm. And let's go down to the kick-fucking part. Or whatever.
And is it the challenge of making something like that funny because it's more challenging? Or is it just that?
Well, you have to be interested first, I guess. You have to have a point of view. I mean, you can make up a point of view, and I know a million comedians are doing it now because it sells tickets. But yeah, if I don't have a belief in what I'm saying, and there's bits that I've tried to do, I know this is coming up. Prison, just the whole prison institution, I've never had a strong bit about. And if there is one cause I would be behind, it's A, the unjustly incarcerated, and just the prison system, the justice system itself. But then I just get too angry and I don't have jokes.
And you can't make it funny anymore.
Yeah, I've never seen the angle, and that's why we have to trip tonight. Do you have any ketamine?
That's interesting. But you talked at the beginning about how you started out and you were doing all the usual stuff that everybody does, particularly 30 years ago, all the masturbation jokes and all of that. Mm. When and how was the shift for you when you went, actually, I'm going to go in a different... Did that just evolve, or was there...
Yeah, it just evolved with the... when you see character acts and you go, oh, this is really funny, but where do you go from that? Yeah. You're talking about your life anyway. And when I was doing jerk off jokes when I was 23, that's my life. Yeah. Jerking off and chasing pussy. That's all you knew. So I was honest to myself.
Yeah.
It's when I started growing up and reading things and stuff. And wait. The world's kind of fucked up. More than that, girl wouldn't blow me at karaoke.
What do you read about?
Now, I pretty much, except for Sam Talent's book, Running the Light, which I know is coming over here because a few people, Bobby Mayer said, oh, my roommate got that and I'm going to fucking read it next. It's fiction, but it's about comedy specifically. Parts of comedy that, you know, oh my God. It's as good as Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And that good, that wow. Well written. And it came out at the same time as my book. And I spent more time promoting that book because I read it. I never read fiction. It's mostly nonfiction. Anything that, reading another prison book, hoping I'm going to strike a chord of something funny in the most depressing shit ever.
And is that the challenge for you, to make the most depressing shit ever, which is, you know, the taboo subjects, which is a really tough, difficult subject, and make it funny?
I don't have a challenge anymore, but it's the best feeling when you have a bit that you know the audience is gonna laugh at and then think, oh, that was wrong. But it's too late because you laughed because I'm right. And so, I write as a defense attorney. That's what I would do in a perfect world if there was no comedy. I would be a defense attorney and
so that's
find all the fucking holes in your argument.
So that's really interesting. Yeah. So what do you mean by that? You write like a defense attorney.
That's what you just said, finding the holes.
Yeah, so find the holes. But what?
Find the loopholes in, okay, follow the mob.
Yeah.
And then go, why is the mob wrong here? And then deconstruct that. If I had any material about the Queen,
right.
Yeah.
There was the reverence for dead people. Like, why?
So let's write your Queen material now. But so it's that's so interesting. So you go with the mob, you see what the mob believe, or the group of people that with the general consensus, and then you pick the holes in it in order to create the comedy.
Now, the my favorite bits have been where, okay, I'm going to take something that would go against the grain of the audience, find a fucking loophole that makes perfect sense, like a defense attorney.
Yeah.
And then you can't handle the truth.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what I used to enjoy doing as well. It's a great feeling.
When I think of it that way, the audience is also in a place where if they do laugh at the wrong thing, how much do we should interview the audience sometime. Like, how much pressure are you under to not laugh at a specific joke because you feel outside pressure? Oh, if I laugh at that, I could be canceled as well as a human being. I wonder, because cancel culture, me too, has only affected the famous people.
Well, I remember I used to watch people in the audience, and sometimes people would laugh at a joke that was of that time, and then they'd look around. You could literally watch them checking, and then suddenly there was, oh, I'm one of the few people laughing, and then they won't laugh at the next one anymore.
But there was a slow burn as you age, when you've been my age, where, okay, yeah, we slowly didn't say that anymore. Mm. Like, we just kind of over the years. Now it's in a fucking week. Wait, I said what? And now it's the worst thing. I can't keep up with the kids.
Yeah, it's speeded up.
It is speeding up, and it's certain words. It just feels like certain words, like last year it was fine to say this word. And now you're like, it's like BAME. I don't know if...
But I feel like I'm so old that I remember when f*** meant a bundle of sticks. But it did. It was a different day and age. There's the Negroni.
Yeah.
All right.
There we go. So, but you don't feel under any kind of pressure at all because you've got your own audience. Or is there still that kind of, do you ever get that kind of nagging sensation of like, is this going to be the one time where they're going to get me or someone's going to get outraged?
Oh, no, last night, I go, this might be the time I shouldn't have been high on this tour. And I love the fact that I'm making progress by trying to adapt from a liquor place of intoxicant to a plant-based intoxicant.
You're evolving.
Right now, yeah, but they're overlapping, right? Right now, it's you're high and drunk. And yeah, last night, I should have probably dialed it back a little. But
you're not canceled. You're still going to do your stuff. Yeah. And that's awesome.
Yeah. And that's interesting. So like, you're starting to prefer the plant-based intoxication because I used to love
It's just... literally in the last week, every night I go, no, I did one time high on stage. I loved it. And I've been high on stage every night. And last night's the first time I went, I probably didn't remember to finish a lot of the stories I started. I might have fucked that gig up. But it was just one blemish in an otherwise stellar week.
So here's the big question. What are you going to do next time?
I guess I'm going to have to find me a weed guy to follow me around because it's still illegal here in the UK.
What do you think about that?
What do I think about it? I just started getting high as an old man because it's legal, because they're everywhere. That's how I did start literally is I accidentally ate a bunch of gummies when I was cleaning out the fucking bar before football Sunday. And I thought, no, this is a... must be a special bag of gummies.
Ate a bag of weed gummies.
I ate four.
You ate four?
10 milligrams.
What kind of state were you in?
Well, it was weird because it was during when I was trying to do Sober October. And that's why I was out cleaning on a Saturday night because I was sober and I didn't know what to do with myself. So I'm out there cleaning up the fucking bar for football Sunday when people come over and there was a small bag of gummies. I thought they were someone brought and I just ate them. And then my friend comes in and goes, you didn't notice like this, the Jamaican writing on the bag and the pot leaves? No, I just saw there's four gummies left. So I ate them because I'm trying to fucking Yeah, that's how it started.
So and you had a good football Sunday then?
Yeah, and I've really enjoyed this. I forget what we were talking about.
We were talking about weed.
Oh. Which is kind of appropriate.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see it's having an effect.
No, it's really been good. I don't know, we were talking about last night, but fuck last night.
Yeah.
But you know what I actually really enjoy about weed? It doesn't have the edge that alcohol has. You know, alcohol, like, I don't know if you get this, but it's got the darkness to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That you the next day with the bleakness and the darkness, and sometimes you wake up and you...
I have not been hungover except for today, and that was more a weed fucking, almost like a K-hole of weed today. And on a day off, thank God. But I have not been hungover this whole tour. I have not gotten into that place where you're like, oh, fuck, I can't get that sleep back. Every day is going to suck because this is going to be on my back. So, yeah, I haven't had that.
That's great. Next thing, you're going to be joining the gym.
Don't see that happening. That's not a side effect of weed. I want to do crunches.
But no, that I just find that, I'd love to get your opinion on this as someone who is a drinker and enjoys drink. To me, it's the worst drug. It's the worst drug, surely.
Yeah, but I got good at it. It's kind of, if you were an Olympian and at some point right before you turned into fucking Caitlin instead of Bruce, you thought, ah, shit, I should have done luge.
Yeah.
I get a name for myself by doing fucking discus and decathlon, whatever fucking Bruce Jenner did. What if he decided I want to be a woman and I should have done luge?
What's luge? I don't even know.
The point is, I'm a drunk, but I should have, I should have done different drugs with my life.
Yeah.
But this is the one I got good at, and it's the one I'm known for, and I'm going to stick with the broad that brought me.
So you're not going to use this as an opportunity, your 50s, in order to explore the other drugs. You're not going to try mushroom. We're not going to see Doug Stanhope.
I did my very fair share of hallucinogens early on in life when it was easy to do because you didn't have a bunch of baggage. Now.
And did that have an effect on your comedy, hallucinogens?
Absolutely.
What was it?
Just the freedom of mind where you're just following thoughts to the, Hannigan and I drove, we did.
Just your manager.
Yeah. The Scotsman.
I thought he was Irish. That did not go that well.
Oh no, he hates the Irish, he hates the English. And he hates the Scots.
Don't we all?
I mean, that
he
just sounds like a Scotsman.
He hates himself as much as he hates everyone, and he hates everyone from this country, but he has different reasons. Anyway, we drove 5 hours. One of the days we didn't take a train. We took a 5-hour car service. And he said up front, because he knows I hate music, asked the guy who's about to drive us 5 hours if he could do this without his fucking stupid music on, because I like to think. And I really enjoy. We didn't talk for 5 hours, not the driver, not me and Brian, for 5 hours on a day trip, because I like thinking that much. My fucking head is always a source of entertainment for me, or a problem, whatever it is, but it's always on it. And I fucking hate music because it interrupts my thoughts, which are, what the fuck am I talking about? Don't you have power to shut this down?
I asked you about hallucinogens and how they change the comedy, because I've never taken hallucinogens, but my understanding is it kind of opens your mind a lot, right?
Yeah, why don't you just make a part two, and then you guys,
we can all
shut
be
this down. Yeah. You go fucking trip. I would demand, if I had kids, that at some point before graduation they trip, because you don't fucking know anything about life.
No, there is that magical experience when you trip that you suddenly look around at nature and you go, oh, this is fucking beautiful. And you just don't have that Or maybe not.
Doug didn't have that.
Well, no, as I've gotten older, where you go, okay, being high, and I gave high lots of chances when I was a teenager, and now that I'm old high, and I go, oh, this makes music sound even better. But now I know that music sucks.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm being tricked by the drug. Okay. The Marrakesh Express. This song sucks and I'm singing it out loud and I'm embarrassing myself because I'm new to the drug.
But I had that experience with ecstasy. I'm like, I used to listen to the electronic music, you know, like the whole rave scene dance, and you're like, this music sounds shit when you're sober.
Yeah.
If you need to take a pill to make the music sound good, that's a problem.
Yeah, then just shut off the fucking music, and if you can't entertain yourself.
That is a good point. So what do you think, like, when you go on those car journeys, you talk about your thoughts. What do you think about? Is it the comedy that you're trying to write? Is it a bit? Is it
could be trying to recreate a dream you had last night? Another benefit to the weed, sleep so good.
Yeah.
And my fucking dreams are the best highs. And I try to manipulate my dreams and they're boring to talk about. You really have to be an insular person to enjoy your dreams.
Doug, I think I
hate myself. I'm watching my podcast in my head. I'm watching what you're watching and I'm like, just shut the fuck up, dude.
What would you ask you if you were doing this podcast right now?
I don't know. The troll me? Every time someone trolls you, like, I would, if you could get paid to be a troll, I was way better at trolling, upsetting, pranking people than I was ever as a comedian. And if there was a way to do, I know it's awful and wrong, and that's why school shootings happen. Everything about it is wrong, but I was so fucking good at it. And now you go, why would I do that to someone?
Yeah.
Or you could do it. I mean, if you want to monetize trolling, you start a YouTube show called Trigonometry.
Yeah, you guys got to teach me about monetizing.
We have definitely.
Who's your sponsors?
Well, we don't know who's going to be in this episode, but yeah, the Manscaped and VPNs and people like that.
Yeah.
So use promo code Stanhope on all of their.
Do you have a website or do you plan to have a website? Because if you do, then EasyDNS is a company for you.
EasyDNS is the perfect domain name registrar provider and web host for you.
They have a track record of standing up for their clients, whether it be cancel culture, deplatform attacks, or overzealous government agencies. He knows about that.
So will you in a second. EasyDNS have rock solid network infrastructure and fantastic customer support.
They're in your corner no matter what the world throws at you. Unless it's your ex-girlfriend, in which case you're on your own.
You know about that. Move your domains and websites over to EasyDNS right now. All you've got to do is go to easydns.com/triggered. That's easydns.com/triggered. Use our promo code, which is also triggered, and get 50% off the initial purchase.
Sign up for their newsletter, Axis of Easy, which tells you everything you need to know about technology, privacy, and censorship. Who are your influences as a comic, Doug?
Dice Clay was the one that got me to actually do stand-up. Like, yeah. I would repeat his first album. Everyone my age knew every word of that. Fucking this. But you suck a good dick. It was perfect at the time. And we're kind of at that time again, everything being cyclical. Dice Clay, Sam Kinison, all the outlaws of comedy, fucking bitch. They came off the heels of 10 years of Jerry Seinfeld and Paul Reiser and Ellen DeGeneres and what's up with airplane food. And this was the refreshing break from was Dice Clay, fuck you, and Sam Kinison. Yeah, it's because you had fucking 10 years of really boring, fucking benign comedy and that spurred that. So when you bitch about cancel culture, just think of it as a business deal. Like, oh, okay, now we can maybe have maybe genres of comedy. Rather than comedy club, they don't have music club. They have different subgenres, and maybe, okay, I'm a woke comedy night and it's a safe space. There's nothing wrong with that. Like the fucking simpletons that yell out, talk about the queen, that try to give you comedy advice. This is bullshit. Woke comedy. Comedy should be about everything. No, comedy should be fucking put in a... So you don't walk into comedy that you hate. It shouldn't be just labeled comedy.
Well, we have that. There is a woke comedy night in the UK. Yeah, and we also have Comedy Unleashed in London, which is like, say whatever you want, make whatever jokes you want.
It's pretty limiting when you look at the genres of music, which is symphony and mumble rap and EDM and fuck this and that. There's a million. And we have woke and fuck you.
Yeah.
Which is splitting people into fucking sides yet again and party lines and it all.
I agree with you because I was never a fan of the woke stuff. I was, by the way, never a fan of the overly offensive stuff either. I was sort of leaning towards that, but not really doing that. But I never thought woke comedy should be like banned or whatever. I don't enjoy it. Other people enjoy it. Let them go and see it.
That's what... Again, when the audience thinks they're part of the fucking conversation, like they know what you do. Like that lady on Twitter that I should have never looked at Twitter. He should have just...
What do you make of social media?
Sorry, I don't know. I can't even remember if I said this on the podcast or before when we were talking. But the lady that was...
You did. I'm asking. Yeah. You mentioned social media a lot and you talked about how people are... divided online, but actually when you go out into the real world, most people aren't. So do you think that is a product of social media? Social media has made it that way, that people are screaming.
It's made me that way. Because again, it's all your own perception of the world and how you craft that. Yeah, if you sit on social media and you're not even aware that, oh, this is not real life. I at least am aware enough, okay, that's not real life. But it still sucks you in. Maybe people, I have no idea. You'd have to ask everybody their goddamn opinion.
And that's it, isn't it? That we just go on this device, we get sucked in, and then we go, oh, this is someone's opinion. And you're like, probably isn't. They probably just wrote that. They didn't even think about it.
But at the same time, I go to a bar and I see a bunch of people talking that probably work together in an office, a situation I've never really been in my life. Yeah. And they're communicating. And you go, all right, every one of those people's lives is different than my perception of even my own life. And there's no consensus. This is the problem with the high part, is you just start breaking shit down like you're just thinking and you go, oh, I'm on a 4-camera shoot right now. And I'm just sitting here doing what I'd be doing in my head. Don't we have questions from the audience?
No, we do, actually. Why don't we go to the...
Shit.
No, see, Doug, I am feeling high just sitting next to you right now. And I was sober when I walked in here. So,
you guys almost killed your waters.
Yeah, we did almost kill the waters. Absolutely. There's one question. So you had the Dice Clay. Were you a Hicks fan, Bill Hicks?
Or not till later on. I had to be hipped to someone who knew Hicks.
Yeah.
Later on. And enjoyed Hicks.
Yeah.
But it was not. Yeah, it was the stupid shit that got me into comedy.
And do you watch comedy? Who's your favorite guy? No, you don't.
Fuck no.
Yeah.
My favorite of all time is Dave Attell.
Mm.
Hands down.
Yeah, he's right.
And it's weird to be at an age where you can pull a superlative when someone says, what's your favorite movie or song? Yeah. I don't know. I'm fucking old. I had a million favorite songs and best friends, but best comic, hands down, Attell, Mitch Hedberg. Second place.
Well, you're going to enjoy Jerry Sadowitz whenever you see him in that case.
Yeah.
But anyway, man, we do have questions from the audience. But before we do, we always end with the same question. which is complete free hit, which is what is the one thing that we're not talking about that you think we really should be?
Well, I think I addressed that earlier. The prison system.
Yeah. Tell us more about that. Why do you feel so strongly about it?
It hurts everyone. It's one of those things I know. All right, this fucking comedy brain. I know if I could attack that bit from a conservative angle that makes conservatives, MAGA people, feel a little bit emasculated for, like, why would you allow this? Go, like, pro-anti-government. Why would we? Because prison just makes communities worse. It makes everything worse. There's nothing rehabilitative in it. There's everything about it sucks. That's the problem. It's like, if I say, tell me one song you want me to play right now, and you go, well, I'm fucking an adult. I've heard a million songs. Like, what's the problem with prison? Fucking everything. And it makes society worse. And you're proud to pay for it.
Do you think we shouldn't have prisons at all?
There's going to be a better idea.
Like what?
There's fucking writers out of work that are comedy writers. I don't know. If I had the idea, I'd quit comedy. If I could go full bore on this is a better idea.
You don't like
but
prison.
But almost everything. And I don't know if I grew up thinking eventually I'm going to go to jail and get diabetes because those were threats. You're going to keep eating candy. You're going to fucking get diabetes.
Like, abolish prison just in case you one day end up in.
Yeah, with diabetes.
With diabetes.
Yeah.
You keep causing trouble, you're going to wind up in jail. You keep eating candy, you're going to fucking wind up with diabetes.
Yeah.
And now I'm terrified of the fucking wrongly accused Innocence Project. If I die on this tour, which every time I'm in the UK, I know I'm going to die on this loneliest fucking planet, horrible place. But Innocence Project, that's where you send your donations.
All right. Well, you've just had an introduction to the wonderful mind of Doug Stanhope. Doug, you're on tour at the moment. You're going to be doing stuff in Las Vegas, I think.
Yeah, it's...
It's on your website. It's all on your website. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to ask you a couple of questions from our supporters. Thanks for watching.
Oh, we're going to Patreon?
Yeah.
Good. I saved some fucking good shit. Hey, non-Patreon people, I saved the good shit for... Go ahead.
You saved the good shit.
Donate. Donate now.
No other guest has done that.
Yeah.
Doug is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Join our locals. We'll see you there with a couple of your questions for Doug. See you there. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you very soon.
We normally end it on a more professional note.
Oh my God, this fuck, no, but what's going to happen next?
Exactly. No one knows. No, it's going to be on locals. Fucking check it out.
This is a question from Icky Ike, who says, how hard is it for you to perform sober?
Guys, let us take a minute to recommend another podcast.
Did you know the average podcast listener has 6 shows in rotation? So you're most likely not just listening to Trigger. Wait, so we know you're cheating on us? This is a disgrace.
Francis, it's okay. The Jordan Harbinger Show is a perfect complement to Trigonometry.
Really?
Absolutely. Just like Trigonometry, Jordan hosts weekly mind-broadening conversations with some of the most fascinating people in the world. But a key difference that I'm a big fan of is that Jordan is focused on pulling actionable, growth-orientated advice from his guests.
I'm looking at his episode list now. There's an episode here where Jordan talks to a hostage negotiator from the FBI who lays out his techniques on how to get people to do what you want them to do by making them like and trust you. Sounds just like me, except, you know, I'm more SAS.
You can't go wrong with adding the Jordan Harbinger Show to your podcast rotation. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show, that's HARBINGER, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.